You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. I've been waiting a long time to say that. I'm CD125's Brian Phillips. Patrick Murphy is here. Ori Benatar from themassivereport.com. First of all, hell of a match out in Seattle that last game. Let's break. No, wait, that was like 3 months. I think we've already watched it again like five times. How many times have you guys rewatched either that or the NYC match this year?
I've rewatched the NYC game after the first week. I have not rewatched the Seattle game, though I have watched a lot of old crew games that they've been playing.
I've been kind of dabbling in some old MLS highlights here and there, but I think Jordan Angeli's been breaking down both the Seattle and NYCFC game literally every inch and every second of it for the last 3 months.
Well, you have anything better to do.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, I love old MLS uniforms. There's no question. The shorts was on point. You know, the collars and everything. It's amazing how much that stuff has changed. Everything was so baggy. How did they put up with that? They should have gone on strike. Get better. So before we dive into the return of MLS, I have to ask both of you, what's the most embarrassing sporting event that you've watched in your desperation to see people compete with one another?
I watched marble racing for like 3 hours one day, just on YouTube.
Marble racing?
Yeah, well, I was just so my new neighbor on the other side of our duplex is a friend of mine, and so we sat out on our individual porches and put a TV in between. We were watching German soccer, and then it's like there was nothing else on, so we just got on YouTube and we're looking for, you know, stupid stuff to watch, and we found marble racing, and so it was just kind of on for like 3 or 4 hours while we were hanging out there.
Do you recommend it?
It gets old quick. I mean, it's interesting for a bit, but you know, if we weren't also sitting there talking and, you know, drinking a few beers and whatnot, I wouldn't have continued to watch it, but it was kind of background.
Were you guys wagering on marbles?
No, we did talk about that though. You know, we'll have some friends over, we can wager because we've already done some scouting. We haven't done that yet, so don't tell me.
Yeah. Good point. How about you, Ori?
Nothing as odd as marble racing or something as, you know, unique, but you know, I've watched a couple old, MLS World Cup baseball games on YouTube, obviously playing a lot of video games. So that keep me intact. Football managers definitely come in handy with, everything regarding missing the season and whatnot, but, playing a lot of poker in my house with my brother and my dad. So been getting better at that, even though I'm a very random player. I either bluff or not bluff with my betting, so they'd probably shoot me on sight if I was at the Bellagio. So I have some work to do.
Oh, well, they wouldn't. They would love to see you coming.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know about that.
Well, my most embarrassing is NASCAR. I've never watched NASCAR in my life, and I've watched parts of like 4 races. And I tried to give it a chance, but it's like they go around 2 laps, and then there's a yellow flag. And everybody goes in and changes their tires, and it seems like nothing ever happens. I gave it a shot. I really did.
Yeah, I've struggled to NASCAR. Get into it.
I had a NASCAR phase back in the day. It takes time to get into it, but now it's just like, okay, I get it. It's a bunch of left turns. There's some pit stops, and cool. Most people,
well, thank God for the Bundesliga. That has literally saved my life the last few weeks. And just from a time standpoint, I've never allotted that much viewing time to watching the Bundesliga just because you only have so many hours in the day. That's a great league, obviously. I've really enjoyed it. Now, certainly Bayern Munich has a bit of an advantage over everyone else. They're kind of frightening, but yeah, it's fun. It's been good. I don't mind the idioms. I love the pumped-in audio. Do you guys like that?
Yeah, I've liked it. I was getting used to the empty stadium sounds, and then they brought the audio back. And actually, I didn't even realize it at first, and somebody texted me and was like, what do you think of the piped-in audio? And I was like, oh, yeah, there is sound. Like, that sounds normal. So I don't mind it. I've seen that people have strong opinions one way or the other, but to me, I didn't even notice that it was back at first.
I'm kind of 50-50 on it just because of the fact that I'm I like the Nat sound aspect. You know, if there's no fans, not necessarily hear the sound. But what I just heard today, actually, NBC is going to pump in crowd-specific noise from the video game FIFA, because in FIFA, they actually have crowd-specific sounds for each stadium of all 20 teams. So you can hear You'll Never Walk Alone at Anfield when Liverpool's playing. But they're going to give people the option of whether or not they want to have the crowd noise while watching or the natural sound of no crowd noise. So I like that a little more, to give people that option, because, like, I'm 50-50 on it.
Well, I think the audio guy is on point. I love when either the home team is not attacking enough, or obviously the referees make a poor call. They pump up the whistling, and I just laugh. You know, I mean, obviously they're paying attention to the game. But I'll tell you, before we get into this, one more point. I was thinking of the linesmen especially. They have to love this more than anyone else.
For sure.
This has to be the greatest thing in the world. They get paid the same, and they don't have to hear it from anybody.
Yeah. You know, and even the head referee, even after a game, they don't have to get assaulted by the fans or anything. So they're loving life right now.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's dive into this tournament. And if you would have told me 3 months ago that MLS would figure out how to get back on the field of play before the other sports in this country, I wouldn't have taken that bet. But here we are, back to play, a plan to go forward, and games that count in the standings. It should be a lot of fun to watch. Patrick, how did we get here? Because they certainly seemed far apart even a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the two sports I think we thought, you know, maybe the one sport that we thought would get back before this was baseball, and it's the one having similar issues to what MLS was a couple of weeks ago, with collective bargaining agreements and, you know, players disagreeing with the league and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, it got close to being a lockout. Obviously, there was a new CBA that was agreed upon before the season started, but never ratified. You know, they figured we'll have time to get that done. We just want to get the game started. And then, you know, we get two games in and this pandemic hits. And so that threw a wrench in things. And then MLS decided this was a good time to try and make changes to the agreed upon CBA, which the players union did not take kindly to. But because they wanted to get back on the field and, you know, not only compete themselves, but give fans something to watch and enjoy, they agreed to certain terms. Then the league came back with more terms. And, you know, like in any negotiation, there was a lot of back and forth. I don't think this was a good look for the league. You know, I think this was a time that the league could have shown a lot of goodwill towards the players and you know, worked with them to be better than it were. But, you know, eventually, you know, I think it was June 3rd was the date when everything was finally agreed upon and the CBA was ratified. So the main things that came out of it, the players agreed to a 7.5% pay cut. There's a force majeure clause, which basically allows either side to get out of the CBA in case of something crazy like this pandemic situation. The league originally wanted to be able to get out based on declining attendance numbers. I think it was 5 teams if they dropped below a certain percentage. The players' union was not having that, because we all know how easily attendance numbers can be fudged one way or the other. So that was not happening. So the league agreed to drop the attendance part of that. But there is that clause in there, which is normal in CBAs. And then there was the new revenue sharing plan, which was a big deal when it was announced to be part of this CBA. The teams were supposed to get, given the new broadcast deal, which starts in 2023, when that reaches 100 million, you were supposed to get 25% starting that year. They agreed to drop it down to 12.5%. So for 2023, just to help, you know, with I guess lost income and whatnot. And then it'll jump up to 25% in 2024. So those were kind of the sticking points. The tournament and the health stuff was all agreed upon ahead of time, and we can go into that. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, to say that there was potentially a lockout, I mean, the league definitely threatened that to the players. The players union was, you know, they all agreed to not show up for individual training, which was a voluntary thing for a few days, a couple of days, I guess I should say. And so it got contentious, to say the least. But, you know, in the end, cooler heads prevailed. everything got agreed upon. We have a new CBA, and you know, there's going to be soccer. So good for everybody for you know, putting differences aside and you know, letting things get back to normal. And like you said, MLS is going to be the first of the leagues, the major leagues in America to get back, which is a cool thing. They're going to have a lot of eyeballs on them coming up, I would imagine, just because people want to watch sports. So the fact that they were able to do that is another advantage to agreeing to this deal.
And the solution they came up with as far as the tournament, I think, is so creative. And MLS has the freedom to do that, whereas baseball is bound to their tradition. But that's not the least of their problems. I don't see them playing at all this year because they simply can't see the forest for the trees and don't understand that this could be the death knell of their sport. And the same could have been said for MLS. And they've turned what could have been a disaster into a real win, I think, Ari. The tournament, is it simple enough to say, well, it's set up like the World Cup?
I wouldn't say simple enough to be set up like the World Cup. In regards to the way the schedule is going to be, I would say yes. I think what MLS has come up with this tournament, the fact that we're going to have 54 matches in a one-month span in a summer that if everything in the world in 2020 went as planned, but obviously it has not, we sitting here right now recording this podcast would have been one day away from the start of the Euros and the Copa America. And anybody who's missing those tournaments like me, I'm so sad that we're not going to have a Euros or a Copa America this summer. I can't wait for next summer for those tournaments. This will quench that thirst for tournament soccer and having all those games in such quick succession over the month. And then whenever the regular season comes back, it gives fans some excitement, not just, you know, a return to a regular season. You know, I like the NHL's plan with having a seeded top four teams in each conference, get some other teams into the playoffs and make it a little bit more of an engaging way to bring people back into the sports rather than just say, all right, let's just resume the regular season and bam. NBA also made a plan as well. It's a shame that what's happening with Major League Baseball, and hopefully an agreement can happen. I fully don't expect the baseball season to occur, but I really like what MLS did with the tournament. There might be a little bit of you know, miscalculations with the way the groups worked out, and we'll get into
it. Well, I don't know. I kind of like them.
I like the way they did, you know, the groups and everything and how they're going to have teams play with each other. The six-team group is a little bit confusing, but we'll get into that when we get into
a little bit
specific draws and all of that stuff. But I really like the tournament. I think it's going to get people engaged. You know, we missed out filling out a bracket for March Madness. When we get into late June and July the 4th, we'll have podcasts predicting the group stage, predicting the round of 16. So I'm really looking forward to it and for everything else to come back as well.
So the mechanics of this, Patrick, you're in a group. In the case of the crew, we're in a group with Atlanta, Red Bulls, and FC Cincinnati, which is just hilarious. How do we get to the knockout stage? What do we have to do?
Well, winning your group is the first way. Finishing second is also the way. And that's where it's similar to, you know, recent World Cups. You know, the top two teams advance. So the third place, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ori, the top four third place teams will then also advance.
Yes. So, yeah. And essentially when you have that situation, so in a 24 team tournament, like the World Cup of old and in the current European Championship format, literally winning a group game can get you into the round of 16. Or just not losing. Because you look at what happened to Portugal in Euro 2016. They tied all three group games, snuck into the round of 16. They won the whole tournament. So Columbus beating Cincinnati, for me, is like the biggest thing they have to do to get out of the group.
Haven't they already beaten them? Isn't that game already over? I mean, what have they done to improve themselves during the pandemic? I guess they have a manager now.
Yeah, I was going to say, they got a coach.
Yeah, Jaap Stam.
I guess I shouldn't be too arrogant about it. Still have to play the game, but it's wildly entertaining that they're in the group. So how is it? Was this a random draw? I mean, I find it hard to believe that it just randomly FC Cincinnati came into a group with the crew.
And then, randomly, we also have El Trafico.
Yeah, Orlando. Yeah, we have LA and LA, and yeah, I get
Salt Lake
it.
And Colorado, all right. Derby, which was announced an hour and a half before we even picked the team out of a pot, or when Charlie David.
Right. Well, you know, people have been this has been a shitty year, if I could just use that word. So if we got to goose it a little bit to make it more entertaining, to give people something to get excited about, I don't care. Let's just play some games. And now, these games count in the standings, and this is where it gets a little weird. If you don't make it out of your group, you're not going to play as many games as other teams, right?
Well, so only the group games count for the standings.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because to avoid that situation, but also, you know, it's broken up into East and West, with the exception of Nashville, which was moved over to the East for this, which I think made sense and will probably end up happening as MLS expands anyway. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, you needed a way to get back. And I think, you know, I'm not saying anything that will surprise anyone here. This is being done for money purposes. You know, you need that ad revenue. And in order to do that, you need games on television. And, you know, you can't have fans right now. So this is the way that MLS can make back some money. And so, first of all, you want to have games. So a way to do it is to put everyone in a centralized location. Down in Orlando is a place that works with that ESPN complex they have down there. And then you want the games to be exciting, because you want people to tune in so that, you know, you're making that money. And, you know, if they had to fudge the draw a little bit to get games that were going to, you know, do that. And I think, you know, if MLS wants to pretend like it was a random draw, that's fine. I think they could have just assigned groups and no one would have cared much anyway.
Yeah.
Fans just want soccer, right? And, you know, the better the games, I think the more people will tune in. Like we said earlier, I think you're going to get more fans than you normally would watching MLS while there's nothing else on TV. And, you know, I think this is a smart way to do it. And, you know, I was texting with Ori yesterday and told him I thought it was dumb, but the more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, this makes sense. It may not be, you know, the ideal situation, but nothing about this has been ideal. So getting back, getting games, you know, it is going to be a little weird that this tournament counts. I'll be interested to see 5 years down the line how we reflect on the 2020 standings, just because you won't have had the normal games and whatnot. But, you know, I think it will – it was an interesting idea, you know, and soccer has – these side tournaments, so it's not that crazy of a concept to do anyway.
So I've been at that complex. We were on an Orlando vacation a few years back, and I just wanted to drop by and look at it. And you know, it's a massive complex. They hold huge youth soccer tournaments down there. So I tweeted yesterday that I just had in my head that people would set up their lawn chairs on the touch lines. And if there would be a big tent where you could buy a tournament shirt and you'd sleep in your car between games and there would be no place to park. But unfortunately, there won't be. I think they should allow their parents to be on the sideline, so it looks like a youth soccer tournament. I think everybody would get a kick out of that.
Yeah, just get a big bag of oranges and some big water bottles.
Yeah.
Feel like a CISA tournament back in the day.
And every game should have one crazy drunk parent who just runs onto the field and wants to fight the referee.
Well, that's not very socially distanced.
You can have one member of your supporters group travel down and be that drunk parent. Yeah, it'll be interesting because, you know, after this, they want to get back into markets and resume. I was told 18-game schedule to finish out the regular season, and their hope is to have some capacity of fans in the stadiums for those games. So, you know, I think that's a major talking point next in sports is, you know, do you have later in the summer, if things continue to stay plateaued or even decline a little bit, or do you start to do that? I know it's been a big topic with college football and NFL in the fall and things like that. You know, are you able to do that to some level? So MLS may be one of the first leagues to try and have fans too, but I think they're going to wait until after this tournament's done. And, you know, we were talking about the crowd noise at, you know, the Bundesliga games. At least those are like full stadiums. This, from my understanding, is a lot of open fields and whatnot.
Yeah,
right. Ryan?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's just a big complex with a lot of soccer fields, a lot of baseball fields, as I remember. A minor league baseball park, which was real nice. And then they have like some shopping and so forth. they have plenty of fields, and I'm sure they'll get them in the kind of condition you need. We can't have some of the fields that my daughter played on, like up in Bowling Green once, where she stepped in a hole and hurt her ankle and was out for several weeks. We can't have holes in the grass, so they'll have to make sure that the fields are up to snuff, and I'm sure they will. I mean, it's a nice complex. I'm not really concerned about that. It's a TV show.
Yeah.
And that's the way that you have to look at it. You can't have fans in there, so just to have something to watch is great. Now, I saw that they're planning on, with the shortened regular season, is this true that they're going to expand the playoff field?
I haven't heard anything concrete on that, so I'm unsure. But
Corey, have you heard anything about that? I saw something about that.
It seems like any regular season plans are still pretty up in the air right now for the most part, because right now they're just focusing on the tournament.
All right, well, before we wrap things up, I suppose we should look at our group, since we got to get out of our group. And we'll save FC Cincinnati for last. That's, that dumpster fire is still going to be smoldering when we get to them. So we have Atlanta in our group. Are there fans? I've forgotten more than I know at this point, because it's been so long since we've had competitive games. But I know last season all their fans were unhappy and everything. But, they did have a very devastating injury just before we went to break. Is he able to come back now?
No. Joseph Martinez is out for the year. So, this is a break for the crew, certainly. When I was looking at how they were doing this before the tournament, one of the things that came to mind was Atlanta may be a team you want in your group. They were one of the seeded teams, so they were considered the top seed in the group. And, looking at that, the other top seeds were Toronto, Orlando, because they were a host team. And who was the other Eastern Conference one?
Those are the three Eastern Conference ones.
I think Toronto's, probably the strongest of those three, given health. And Orlando's, not playing at home, but kind of playing at home. So to me, Atlanta was a team you sort of wanted to face. Now, that's not going to say that it's going to be easy, but it's certainly easier when, you're facing the likes of Adam John as opposed to Joseph Martinez up top. And because of how everything's gone, they haven't been able to go out and sign anybody, and I don't believe that they will before this starts. So unless things change, I think you kind of get a break facing Atlanta United whenever that game is, once they come out with a schedule.
That's an interesting point. I mean, everything has been frozen. You can't bring in players. And so, ironically, Adam John is the guy that they're going to have to go with.
Pretty much.
That makes them way more beatable. I mean, losing Joseph Martinez was like, when that news broke, I'm like, oh, my God. And so early in the season, too. I mean, it just changes everything for Atlanta. And now they've just had to sit there with their head in their hands and not improve their squad any. So, and I don't see that happening in the next few weeks. I suppose it could, but I don't know that you can even bring in players from other countries at this point, can you?
Yeah, probably not. It's based on how quickly everything's happening, but
yeah.
When you have a tournament like this, form doesn't make any difference. Even before a World Cup or a Euros, you'll see teams win friendlies 5-0, or you'll say, oh, they finished perfect in qualifying. That was a year ago. We will get a good sense of how the teams are going to play for the tournament after game one. If you have a striker on form, if you have a defense that is playing out of their minds, those teams usually win those big tournaments. France had a key striker at the World Cup. Their back line barely conceded any goals. They won the World Cup. So who knows? Based on the way the World Cup seeding works, I would expect Columbus to play the Red Bulls first, because it's 4v3 usually first. Then Cincinnati, then Atlanta. So if you play Red Bulls first, get a draw, maybe steal a victory, set the tone for the crew maybe having a chance to win the group, come in second, they could make a run. It's anybody's tournament. Maybe not Cincy or Nashville or Chicago or any of these teams that have weaker rosters, but at the end of the day, they could be underdog Cinderella stories and make a key run, because we've been frozen in time for 4 months once the tournament starts, and tournament play is wild. You never know who's going to be the better team. We can speculate based on rosters, but they haven't played. So we'll see. I'm excited.
Well, and I also think you mentioned the Red Bulls. You know, this isn't the Red Bulls team of recent years that have dominated the regular season. You know, no Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah.
No Dax McCarty. He's been gone for a while, I guess. No, what's their goalkeeper's name that is now at Miami? It's slipped my mind.
Has slipped my mind as well.
Yes, but he's gone as well. You know, it's just a rebuilt roster that, you know, is young and exciting, I think, for sure. Luis Robles, that's
it. Yeah, Luis Robles, yeah.
But, you know, I watched one of their games before this all stopped, and, you know, it was a lot of new guys. But they haven't been training, just like everyone else. In fact, I think they had to wait a little bit longer than some teams just because they're in New York and everything that was going on there. So, you know, I think that's not a game that maybe scares you as much as it did in past years, just because they're still kind of going through a little bit of a rebuild as they go into the next generation of Red Bulls guys. And that's not to say, you know, they're not talented. They certainly are. But, you know, it's just not the names that we think of when we think of the New York Red Bulls the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, I think that if there's any club in the league that is built for consistency through change, if that makes any sense, it's Red Bulls.
Sure.
They have their program. And we saw it early last season when they were trying to play in the Champions League, as I recall, and they had a match a few days before, and then they came here and played us. They had some injuries as well. And that roster was, you know, a lot of who the heck is that guy? And they played really well that day. I mean, I think that they build in depth with their program. So I'm going to assume that they're going to put a good team on the field.
Sure.
Until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
I love having them in our group because I think of them. I almost think of them more like DC United than I do DC United and crew at this point, because I feel like in the more modern history of the league, Red Bulls have been more of a rival for us than DC United have. And
yeah,
I enjoy when we play them. You know, it's always a good match. It's always hard fought. Kind of blew me away when I saw FC Leipzig a couple of weeks ago and they're wearing the Red Bulls kit. Like, wow, these guys, this is truly a global operation.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. It really is. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, all those clubs pretty much try to play the same style, right? It's very uniform.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then we have FC Cincinnati. What do we know? They have a new manager. They hired somebody a few weeks ago. I don't know where they found him. He was actually a pretty accomplished player back in the day, right?
Yeah, Jaap Stam. Jaap Stam was a Dutch center back, played in the late 90s, early 2000s. Was a fierce player. You know, my dad's a Holland fan and my brother's a Holland fan, so they really love Jaap Stam. But he definitely had an iconic moment that he doesn't want to remember too much in the Euros in 2000. In a big penalty shootout against Italy in the semifinals, he skied a penalty during a shootout and basically cost the Dutch a place in the final in Holland. So,
yeah, well, we already know what we can abuse him with then. When Hell Is Real comes back to Columbus.
Yeah, you just gotta yell, "Hey, man, take a penalty." But I do think that Group E is like the toughest group out of the Eastern Conference groups. I mean, you have three teams that are playoff caliber, minus MC Cincinnati. You have some real bad blood between the teams, some history in the previous matchups. Group C is going to be interesting as well. Group A is just kind of a free-for-all, just based on who's going to play who, because obviously not everybody's going to play everybody in Group A. But, you know, you have Chicago, Nashville, Miami, Orlando, Philly, and NYCFC. So it's very wide open depending on who plays who.
Well, sure. I mean, I could see that going any number of ways, really.
I mean, I have to double check to see what the schedule is going to look like, because again, not everybody plays everybody. So Nashville might not play New York City, or Chicago might not play Philly. I mean, I would say New York City is probably the best team in that group.
Yeah.
But Group C with Toronto, New England, Montreal, DC. I think that's anybody's game too. Seattle, the favorites in B with Dallas, Vancouver, San Jose. I mean, getting Cascadia Cup matchup is amazing. Mm-hmm. RSL, Sporting, Colorado, Minnesota. That's like a group of life. Anybody can come in first. Anybody can come in last. I think Group F, though, is the toughest group out of all the groups. I mean, LAFC, Galaxy, and Timbers are all very good teams. Dynamo and Tab Ramos are probably not going to have a good time in that group. They might be like the Panama of what we saw in the World Cup 2 years ago with England and Belgium and Tunisia.
Oh, yeah.
But who knows? Maybe Houston has something in the back pocket to pull out. But the fact that all the rivalries got drawn obviously could seem a little sketchy, but it's amazing. We're going to get Hell is Real, El Tráfico, Cascadia Cup, RSL Colorado, Florida Derby all within 2 weeks. So can't complain.
No, I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to pretend like it was just all happenstance. So refresh my memory. Are there any injuries from when we halted play? Any crew players have any health concerns at all going into this? Or are we just 100% fit as far as we know?
Yeah, they should be good to go from my understanding. The two injuries they had from the last game, well, from prior to the last game in Seattle, were Milton Valenzuela, obviously, that knee injury in that game.
Right.
And he's back. You know, he's trained with what the team's done. And Vito Wormhoor, who did not play in that game. I think more so precautionary. He had a rib issue, also had a bit of a foot issue, got stomped on in the New York City game. So both those guys should be good. The only guy who hasn't been training with the team is Eloy Room, who went back to Holland because he had his wife had his first child. And so he's been back there. But I was told he'll be back this weekend and he's expected to train with the team. And
thank God.
So they should be good to go. From all I understand, obviously there's testing that will be done and everything, but it sounds like everyone is healthy and ready to go.
When will we find out the match schedule beyond that July 8th Orlando-Miami game?
We may have just found it out. I just received an email that I'm looking through right now.
Oh, this just in.
Yeah, but it's very complicated and wordy, so we may have to I don't know why they did it this way.
It's MLS?
So it looks like the crew – they have schedules for Orlando City, Inter Miami, New York City FC, Philadelphia Union, Chicago Fire, and Nashville on here, which are all Group A. Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know why they don't have the full schedule on there. So we'll
find out in due time. We got plenty of time to plan our viewing accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, I think game times are confirmed, though. You're going to have either a 9 a.m., 8 p.m., or 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time kickoffs. So hopefully we don't have the crew playing every single game at 10:30 in the evening.
Yeah,
so
my understanding is that the 10:30 games will be Western Conference.
Okay.
So I think it's more – you'll see the crew at the early – either the 9 a.m. or the 8 p.m. time slots.
And based on the fact that we have all these big rivalry games, I would assume that those would be 8 p.m. time slots or prime time, because Hell is Real can't be a 9 a.m. kickoff in the middle of the week.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, but it's MLS, so who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
And if those times are bizarre to you, it's just because it's hotter than hell in Orlando in the summer. And I think they're just trying to stay out of the middle of the day heat, especially for a bunch of guys who haven't played a competitive game in 3 months. I think that's probably the best course of action to make the games better. You know, if you're playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and it's 100 degrees with, 75% humidity, it's not going to make for the best game atmosphere. So,
yeah, then you'd have to add all the water break precautions.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff. So then you'd have 30-minute stoppages.
Yeah. Are we doing five subs like the Bundesliga is doing? Do we know that?
Yep. Yeah, they will.
So it'll be five subs, but the key rule to remember with that is you're only allowed three stoppages. So let's say you use one sub for your first stoppage and one sub for your second stoppage. You have to use three subs for your third stoppage. You can't put two in. So you have to use five within three separate stoppages.
Gotcha.
The one exclusion to that is halftime does not count. So if you make a halftime sub, that doesn't count.
Or an injury?
No, an injury, any non – it's basically the way it was explained to me was any non-natural stoppage in the game. So, like, halftime is naturally stopping the game. So, you can make substitutes there and it doesn't count. Mm-hmm. But any other times, you have to – that's one of your three.
And then another key rule to remember is for the knockout stages, no extra time. It goes straight to penalties.
Wow. Okay.
So it's going to be intense when we get to the round of 16.
Yeah. I don't know if I like that. Make the end of the games interesting, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose we've kind of covered it all as far as we know right now. Crew in a group with Atlanta, Red Bulls, and FC Cincinnati. Hell is Real is coming to Orlando for the first and only time they can experience that phenomenon that was just getting started when life stopped. And it's so exciting to have Crew soccer to talk about again. I really didn't think this day would come this year. But that's Major League Baseball's job to screw it. Real quick, does anyone know, because I was just wondering about this because I've been worried about him, Zach Steffen tweaked a knee the day that that his club returned to training over in Germany, and he hasn't seen the pitch since. Does anybody know how serious this injury is?
I believe they are going to shut him down for the year.
Whoa.
I don't believe it's that crazy serious. I think they just want it's he had a knee issue when he was here towards the end of his time here, and he's just kind of constantly been playing on it. And so I think, for one, he's on loan, so you know, I'm sure Manchester City had some say in this. Two, they've actually found a solid number two goalie who's played well for them recently, and three, I think they just want him, you know, healthy. Everybody involved, you know, the national team, Manchester City, and this team in Germany. So yeah, from my understanding, he'll probably not play. I don't think he's officially been ruled out, but the talk going into the restart was it'd be unlikely for him to play unless, you know, something drastically changes.
Yeah, it's a tough loss for Dusseldorf. They're in a relegation battle in the Bundesliga.
They need points like you can't believe.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're in that 16th position, which in the Bundesliga is a little bit advantageous because it is not automatic relegation. They would play a playoff against, I believe, the third or fourth place team in Bundesliga.
Third place team in League Two.
In League Two.
Which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I'd like to watch that game, whoever plays in it. Yeah, but I was just thinking about it. I worry about our Zach. I want him to be well. I want him to play. So obviously, if they get relegated, he's not going to stay. Mm-mm. Manchester City. You think he'll ever be between the pipes or City?
Based on the fact that Ederson has become a premier goalkeeper in the Premier League, and despite the fact that he's the number two for Brazil because of how good Alisson is, I don't know. I feel like they could loan him out again. Maybe they decide to loan him out to a sister club like NYCFC or Sydney FC, or maybe a La Liga team or a different Bundesliga team wants to pick him up. So we would have to see. But I also think that in order to him to probably get to a bigger club, he definitely needs to get significant game time and also make appearances for the U.S. men's national team. I think once he starts getting some caps for the U.S., he'll start to grow his resume and maybe play some games for Man City in like FA Cup or League Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him potentially seeing some time in some of the other tournaments, but Ederson's only a year older than him. I don't think that, unless there's something that changes, he's in there. I think he was signed as a guy that they saw as an investment towards the future where they will eventually sell him, you know, somewhere. You know, Man City's done that a lot with young players over the last several years where they bring guys in without really the intent of ever them moving up to the first team and those guys go on loan and whatnot. And actually this was part of their issue with their financial fair play stuff. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Zach is there for a few years, goes on loan, you know, maybe as the backup 1 year or something, and then ends up a starter at another, you know, one of the top league teams.
All right, fellas, did we cover it?
I think so.
Yeah.
When are we going to do this again? Monday?
I'm thinking if we can get everybody on board, the plan is to try and get a full podcast for Monday. And, you know, we can talk more detail about this tournament. Hopefully by then we'll know, you know, schedules and whatnot. So we'll be able to break it down a little bit more, you know, talk a little bit more with the guys that weren't able to make it today and whatnot. So hopefully we'll have another one out Monday with the full gang in tow.
All right. I'll try to gather up some fake crowd noise for the next podcast. kind of spruce up the atmosphere a little bit, you know, right. I mean, it seems to work.
Some bar sounds in the background.
Yeah, just get like a blue jacket, get like a Blue Jackets game from.
Like Leonard Skinner on the jukebox and Blue Jackets game and us ordering up another round. Sounds good. All right, fellas, thank you. It's exciting. It's fun. Thanks for listening to the Massive Report podcast for the first time in 3 months. That's Patrick. That's Ori. I'm Brian. Thanks for listening.